Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It's about 3 minutes past the hour, a little bit off the clock in terms of getting started in a timely fashion. Gosh, I love Windows 10 updates. I can't tell you how much. I really can't. Because I don't. I really don't. But suffice to say, the tired old production computer responds to updates like some people respond to penicillin. It, you know, causes a really bad reaction. Not to infer that penicillin is necessarily a bad thing. Hell, a few years back, it might have saved might have saved that maniac who's entering the White House from having his brain eaten up. But, whatever. So, here we are. This is the 11th day of January, 2017. My grandmother would be 122 years old today. Yeah. How about that? What a pity. What a pity human lives are not longer. You know? Yeah. But it is what it is, I suppose. Right? So, it is, like I said, the 11th day of January, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. We've got a nice little group already gathering in the chat room where you will find recent... let's see, where Steve from Georgia, Stan, and Texas Betsy are moderating this evening, okay? Sparky takes prayer meeting off. Yes, and you'll be met there if you jump in there, pick out a screen name and a password, whatever. You'll be met by, you would have been met by Anatole. Anatole just disappeared. Anatole will probably be back. And Don from Central PA, and Jug of Punch, and VT Blom, and Will in Chicago. They're all waiting for you, as is the rest of the congregation in its various congregation, because this is, of course, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Yeah, I tell you what, it was an interesting meal down there in the Fellowship Hall. And, at one point in time, I poked my head in to see how things were coming along. The little old blue haired ladies were working on some meatloaf. That's what we had this evening, meatloaf. You know, and they don't lay on the breadcrumbs too thick. I mean, this is very meaty meatloaf. It's got some sausage in it, some ground beef, things like that. The ground turkey is forbidden in the Cathedral of Common Sense. But no, I poked my head in there and I heard one of the little old blue-haired ladies say to the other, "Why, what in heaven's name is a golden shower?" And I couldn't resist, so I sort of looked around the corner, and that's when I saw one of the other little old blue-haired ladies lean over and whisper into the ear of the little old blue-haired lady who had asked the question. And the little old blue-haired lady who was getting whispered to, her eyes got big around as boiled eggs. And she begun to blush a little bit. And her mouth just sort of opened up a little bit. And I heard a very quiet, "What? Really?" And there was some vigorous nodding going on. And well, my lands. And that's going to be the president? Mm-hmm. It's not often. I got to tell you, it's not very often that that we take our focus off of explicitly the religion industry here. But when the little old blue haired ladies can't even focus on matters of faith and believing, and instead are mystified by the phrase "golden showers," well, it doesn't bode well. It doesn't bode well for prayer meeting Wednesday at all. But that doesn't mean the fellowship hall meal wasn't any count. That's some first-rate meatloaf that the little blue-haired ladies make. And of course, it's always accompanied. Meatloaf has to go with mashed potatoes. And it did, and it was wonderful, and there were some mixed vegetables. This being the dead of winter, instead of salad, there was some fresh vegetable soup, homemade, little hunks of stew beef chopped up in it. It was right tasty, yeah. And then come dessert, and it was a German chocolate cake. And it didn't have a chance. I mean, they make three of them. And that's, you know, that's three of them times three layers. That's nine round cakes. Deacons made short work of it, I'm here to tell you. Yeah, it was, just went away in a hurry. Washed it down with a cold glass of milk, and away they went, the deacons, up those couple of flights of stairs out there to stand around in the parking lot. It's not nearly as frigid here as it has been, and so they were just wearing a light jacket as they stood there smoking with the sinners in the parking lot. But Sister Carol Baker says, "I'm home and I got my solar-powered cattle prod fired up." Interesting how the electric hum of that thing and a stern look means I don't have to say anything at all anymore. I think that run from the parking lot to the vestibule is the most exercise those fat asses get all week. I'm a giver. And they do. They move. They hear the crackle and hum, and they see the stern look on the face of Sister Carol Baker, and I mean they hot-foot it. And they did. They blew right through that vestibule door, right through the vestibule, right past that bowl of desiccating butter mints, right down the center aisle, and they're waiting right here. They are waiting right here, brethren and sistren. And they got their heavy old brass plates with the velvet lining that keeps the change from tinkling during the praying. Because, you know, God doesn't want to hear change tinkling while there's praying and uplifting going on, you understand. Heck, glory. Mm-hmm. And so here in a minute, we'll call the Minister of Music up. I should remind folks that, yes, this is a listener-supported congregation. It's a listener-supported radio broadcast. And we pulled up right smart short last night, but hopefully we'll get that sorted out this here prayer meeting. It could be worse than it is, but thanks to Tony, and thanks to Brendan in Oregon, and thanks to John, there in Maryland. And thanks to our buddy, our lawn mowing buddy Dennis in Kentucky. And thanks to Ralphs, as well as to Mike in Cascadia. Well, it went from being a $400 fundraising shortfall, $200 shortfall. But anyway, we've got, as it works out, we've got $340 to raise this evening. So just remember that as the plate passes, every head bowed and every eye closed, and just keep that one eye cracked open a little bit, make sure you don't get a concussion. And plates are heavy, I'm telling you, but there's a PayPal button in the bottom of it. You just press it, and there's a little form that'll pop out. It's a hologram. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, just like all those folks I just mentioned who kept us from being in an even deeper hole than we are, well, just click that box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. If you don't want to do that, just put in a number, any number, and we will continue onward from there. So we'll bring up the Minister of Music. We'll bring up the Minister of Music, and he'll lead us in the offertory hymn as the as we set to pass in the plates. And that was probably a Freudian slip on my part, Sister Carol. Sister Carol says, don't say tinkling. It gets the post excited. You know, piece of scatology trump. Yeah, right, exactly. Hoo-wee. Hoo-wee. But anyway, let's bring the Minister of Music up and see if we can take a bite out of that nasty old $340 shortfall, shall we? Yes, Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say,
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, hot suck, real raw on the brawl of suet and a brawl of brawl of suet. Yeah, exactly. Brother and sister, and welcome. I'm calling on you right now to get up off of your seats and onto your feet. Scoot out from between the altogether too close pews. And come on out into the center island, and then move on down that hot glory blood red aisle till you get to the altar. Ha! Glory! And fall upon your knees and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense. How, amen, of flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Hot-Headed Hindu, Badass Buddhist, Bob Kincaid. And this is the Cathedral of Common Sense prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Amen and amen. Like I said, brethren and sistren, we may have a hard time of it this evening. Trying to talk about matters of faith and spirituality. Earther just sent me a note of faith, saying I'm sure the Lord will provide Brother Bob with funds this evening. Lord is Lord. Amen. Amen. And thank you, Brother Keith, for getting us started. That means we're only $330 away from knocking down the fundraising goal this evening. Thank you very kindly for getting us started, indeed. So, brethren and sistren, we do usually have glorious tales of faith, and we got a couple here, but I gotta admit, I'm kind of scatterbrained. All day long, instead of working on the sermon, I've been a-watching of press conferences and confirmation hearings and press babblings and it's hard on your It's hard on your noggin. It really is. But, brethren and sistren, like I said, we do have some heroic tales of faith. As we move, dear God, only 9 days away. You know, this is beginning to feel like the ninth inning of a baseball game when you're at the bottom of the ninth inning and you're down by three and you're already at 3-2 on the first batter. Time feels like it's running out. Before the fecal tsunami washes over all of us. And brethren and sistren, I don't know if you watched the alleged press conference today, which turned out to be much more in the way of a bullying act. You might even say, as Carol Baker notes, that the POTUS got pissed because he done did. Complaining about all that yellow journalism and whatnot. One of the things that he did is he said that news outlets that don't satisfy him will, and this is a quote, these three words, suffer the consequences. Now, brethren and sistren, I can imagine that we all understand that that's a little bit chilling. When you go and you read your First Amendment law and your cases on First Amendment, you will find cases relating to the press where the court is forever worrying about a chilling effect on free speech. Well, you can't get much more chilling than the POTUS saying that he would make news outlets, even CNN, suffer the consequences. But brethren and sister, and I have a prophetic feeling, despite the fact that my busted magic eight ball always says, answer hazy, ask again later. I have a prophetic feeling, brethren and sistren, that this is only the tip of the shitberg. It's going to get more, and it's going to get worse. And one wonders, one cannot help but wonder, what that exactly means that CNN will suffer the consequences. Is Wolf Blitzer going to wake up with a horse's head in his bed? We don't really know. Or, you know, given the Russian connection, maybe he'll wake up with a yak's head in his bed. Yeah. But it ain't just Trump. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And so I thought we might check in on that proud son of Stanford, helmet-haired Brian Fisher, who has recently declared that he's making a list and checking it twice.
George Washington said, look, a guy cannot be considered a patriot. He cannot be considered a patriotic American if he labors to subvert either Christianity or the Ten Commandments.
Okay, this is a little troublesome. I don't think if you go through the entire writings, pronouncements of George Washington, that you will ever see a point where, at any moment, where George Washington said, a guy can or cannot do something. No. And secondarily, since we're dealing with, you know, helmet-haired Brian Fisher, proud son of Stanford, of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. Subvert either Christianity or the Ten Commandments. Thereby, apparently admitting that the Ten Commandments are not part of Christianity. Because if it was part of Christianity, it would be the Ten Commandments and Christianity. Using a conjunctive as opposed to a disjunctive or. But never mind.
The essence of what it means to be a patriot, according to George Washington, the definition of patriotism, the essence of patriotism, is a man who is a sincerely devoted follower of Jesus Christ and seeks to live his life by the Ten Commandments.
Which never got said. George Washington talked a lot about providence, and he talked some about God, but what Brian Fisher just said, George Washington didn't say. But then again, Brian Fisher is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, which is a long, complicated way of saying liar. And so, but there's a point to all this, and it is a right disturbing point.
Here's to Christianity and to the Ten Commandments. That is the definition and the mark and the hallmark of a patriot. And if somebody's laboring to subvert these things, you know, George Washington said, look, I'm not talking about perfect obedience here. I know nobody's going to do that. That's why we need a savior.
I also don't think George Washington ever began a sentence with, look. You follow? Yeah.
But if somebody is out there working to undermine, to subvert these things, to work against Christianity, to work against the public acceptance and the acknowledgement of the Ten Commandments. That guy is no patriot. He is a traitor to his country. And I have no hesitation in saying that today. You want to find a traitor to your country, find somebody who is actively working to oppose Christianity and oppose the public acknowledgement of the Ten Commandments. You are looking, my friend, right there at an American traitor.
Yep, like I said, making a list, checking it twice. Going to find out who's traitors and who's nice. So, if you're an actual constitutionalist who objects to violations of the First Amendment clause that prohibits the establishment of religion, not some religion, not this religion, but not that religion, but any religion, these theocratic fascists are ready to take note of the fact that you are a traitor. Breaking, George Washington just tweeted, "Brian, I never said that." But CNN's going to suffer the consequences. And Brian Fisher says that anybody who doesn't want the government to pay to post the Ten Commandments, which very few of which actually are, you know, relevant to modern life. Well, I don't know. I mean, Donald Trump probably does covet people's asses, but that ain't on liberals. That's on Donnie. Well, you're a traitor. But here's the fun part. Now that he's been caught, Brian Fisher now says he never said. I mean, you heard it. Anybody who opposes the posting of the Ten Commandments is a traitor to the United States. You heard it. Now Brian Fisher says you can't believe your lying ears. Yeah, really.
Looking at a story here from the Huffington Post, going after yours truly, no. Ed Mazza, the overnight editor at the Huffington Post. Conservative radio host Brian Fisher said last week that anyone who opposes Christianity is a, quote, traitor, end quote, to America. Fisher began his program by citing George Washington's farewell address, in which the nation's first president linked religion and morality to patriotism as proof that anyone who doesn't follow Jesus Christ can't be a patriot. You know, and I say to the Huffington Post, look, I didn't say that. I didn't say that you can't be a patriot if you don't support Christianity and the Ten Commandments. George Washington said that.
Here then, and I won't go back to the clip, but here then is the quote. If somebody is out there working to undermine, to subvert, to work against Christianity, to work against the public acceptance and the acknowledgement of the Ten Commandments, that guy is no patriot. He is a traitor to his country. And I, not George Washington, I have no hesitation in saying that today. You want to find a traitor to your country? Find somebody who is actively working to oppose Christianity and oppose the public acknowledgement of the Ten Commandments. You're looking, my friend, right there at an American traitor. Now, it is not at all difficult to find a copy of Washington's farewell address. There is no language even remotely resembling what I just read to you that emerged from the filthy cesspool that is the mouth of Brian Fisher anywhere in that address. Because Brian Fisher is, come on, We can do this. A liar! So, let's see. Opposing posting the Ten Commandments all over creation, that makes you a traitor. Well, disgraced chaplain Chappie Klingenschmidt, you know, fixing your Klingenschmidt is another thing that penicillin is good for. He's got his own list. And, of course, we know from long experience that Chappie has a real fascination with the gay. So, guess what? Sorry, you can't be gay and teach children to, like, read or do their ciphering or their gazintas or anything. No.
Let's take a moment and discern the spirits.
Oh, goody. We're going to discern spirits. I always like it when we discern the spirits because it always turns out that the spirits say everything. The spirits all, well, you know, they always say and believe the same things and hate the same things that Chappie does. I'm living. I am absolutely living for the day when Chappie gets caught in a Kmart parking lot somewhere in Colorado offering... Oh, I don't know, since he's a big Trump fan, maybe offering a rent boy a few pieces of silver to maybe go pee-pee all over him. Who knows? I mean, birds of a feather, right?
There is a demonic spirit of child abuse. I mean, setting aside the obvious murder-suicide, these two men were deceived on so many levels. But when you begin to abuse children... Now, there was a 16-year-old who came forward, but eight other elementary-age children had been abused by this teacher in the school.
Hmm. So I guess this isn't going to be about some youth minister somewhere raping little children. No. For some reason or another, Chappie never gets those stories. We seem to be the only ones who do. Yeah, but anyway.
Now, those are just the human actors. Now, who is to blame for this spiritually?
Wait, those are just the human actors? Are there porpoises involved? Turtles? Coelacanths? Oh, no. Non-human demons. Of course.
There are even policy decisions that are made in America. And not just by... this gay couple.
Wait, there's a gay couple making policy decisions? Oh, my. You know, this is one of those evenings I hope Matt in San Francisco isn't driving through the Castro District again. It could get you in trouble, Matt.
Who don't know Christ, who are lost in their homosexual sin. But as a culture now... the demonic spirit of homosexuality has taken over and redefined marriage, particularly in Minnesota, to tell these boys that it's okay. And the demonic spirit of deception has taken over the school board, or whoever decided, maybe the principal, decided to hire these child abusers to teach elementary school.
So, I mean, is it a demon that... 'cause we've had oodles of stories on it... is it a demon that inspires ministers and entire congregations to hire youth pastors who go on and rape little children? Is that demons too? Or did that just not happen in Chappie's weird little world?
Well, if anything, they should have been disqualified immediately because of their immorality. Because the immorality inside of these two men are indicators that they are unfit to be a good example to little children. And then the demonic spirit manifests and multiplies in the abuse and recruiting of those children into sin. This is evil upon evil. And it's not just these two men are at fault. It is our laws as a society that need to be changed to prevent and protect children from this kind of abuse in the future.
Yeah. Course, it's never really dawned on Chappie that child sexual abuse is not a matter of homosexuality or heterosexuality, but a matter of pedophilia. Yeah, oh well. Yeah. I had to mute the microphone during that clip because otherwise you would have heard me snort like Mr. F***ing Ed, because I just got a question from Carol, and I may be ringing the cowbell for the next 15 minutes. No, this is high quality. This is restaurant quality. What's the difference between a lentil and a chickpea? Give you a minute to think about that. What's the difference between a lentil and a chickpea? Answer. Trump wouldn't pay $1,000 to have a lentil on his face. Oh, I'm glad I got the guffaws and the snorting out of my system while Chappie was talking. Yeah. Trump wouldn't pay $1,000 to have a lentil on his face. Uh-huh. Like I said, it was a busy day, and I'm kind of scatterbrained, but that helped a lot. I didn't realize until last night that you could repurpose Little Johnny jokes into Little Donnie jokes. Teacher, Little Donnie, can you use urinate in a sentence? Donnie.
Putin said he would only send me tens, but urinate.
I'll be here all night. Don't forget to tip your server. Mm-hmm. It's been like this all day long. New hashtag trending out there last night. P-E-E-O-T-U-S, POTUS, right? Going back to helmet-haired, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, Steve notes, subject line, George Washington, so Trump is not patriotic because he hasn't paid taxes and is a traitor. You know, that whole render unto Caesar stuff. Mm-hmm. Also, regarding discerning the spirits, Steve says, I'm partial to chartreuse and Irish whiskey. Together? That doesn't sound like discerning the spirits. That sounds like discerning a hangover, Steve. Mm-hmm. As I suggested, we need to get real up close and comfortable with the 25th Amendment. And Billable Rick just sent me a note saying, primer on presidential succession in the event of vacancy or disability. Hi, everyone. Thought with the severely compromised orange menace about to assume the presidency, we need to brush up on the above topic, and provides the Wikipedia excerpt on vacancy or disability in the office of president. You can go to Wikipedia and look that up. Might come in handy. What a day. What a day. What a day. What a day. And I sat there all day long. And I just... I had this overarching sensation of, I can't take it. I mean, through all the modern disasters with which we've lived, I mean, I remember the day that Timothy McVeigh, in the name of Jesus, blew up the Murrah Federal Building. I remember I remember the morning of September 11th, 2001. I remember the sickening, sinking feeling of the run-up to the Iraq War. We've been through some shit. But I don't recall ever having this overbearing feeling of something wicked this way comes. That I have now and today, that I had watching the Tillerson hearing, that I had watching more of the Sessions hearing. And it was a bizarre admixture of disgust and foreboding, and then just a certain soupçon of you know, holy shit, this is absurd. The last part was provided during the Sessions hearings. And that happened during the testimony. The Senate Judiciary Committee graciously allowed Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, D, Presidential Ambitions 2020, and Representative John Lewis, D, Hero, to testify against the Sessions nomination. Here's what they did, though. They bookended that testimony with some servile other black folks who referred to Sessions not as Senator Sessions, but as Jeff. And they also made Representative Lewis wait and wait and wait and wait when typical Senate decorum and practice and procedure is to let dignitaries such as Representative Lewis go early. But I guess that kind of decorum is out the window with the likes of Chuck Grassley. And so Representative Lewis spoke eloquently and passionately for why Jeff Sessions, Jefferson Boat Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, should not be allowed anywhere near the levers of power that are enshrined with the Attorney General of the United States. And Cory Booker said similar. But those two men, and one more, were bookended by a couple of servile black men who, as noted, referred to Sessions not as Senator or, just as Jeff, who swore that butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. But the moment of absurd irony came with the final, with the far bookend. A black guy by the name of William Smith. Yes, in fact, as I watched Chuck Grassley today, I thought precisely of what you said, Carol Baker. Belching Chuck Grassley, who eats off the plates of others? I know that asshole. The very one. But William Smith talked about his buddy Jeff and all the time when he was on Jeff's staff, when he and Jeff would just pal around together. I mean, it sounded like Robert Culp and Bill Cosby on I Spy or something. But as if the goddess of irony was watching, and she put words into William Smith's mouth so that we would all understand that Idiocracy has gone from being a comedy movie allegedly set in the future 500 years hence, which was really a social commentary on the state of affairs in the present, to being a damn documentary. Now, I think when the name of Andy Putster was put forward as Secretary of Labor, we, and of course he was the CEO of Carl's Jr., we immediately went to that clip from Idiocracy in which the Secretary of, I forget what, Education, no, was it the Secretary of Labor who said, constantly brought to you by Carl's Jr. Why do you keep saying that? Because they pay me every time I do. Well, it's kind of time to drag that back out. Oh, I mean, I'm not gonna. But during William Smith's testimony, remarks, nobody got sworn. He talked about the times that him and Jeff done had Johnny Rockets hamburgers together. At which point my pink little ears perked up and I went, really, Johnny Rockets? That famous airport hamburger stand? Train station hamburger stand? There's a Johnny Rockets in Union Station in D.C. Seen him in a number of airports. And I thought, well, that was kind of bizarre, and I immediately brought to you by Carl's Jr. But then it got weirder. He said, and not only have we had Johnny Rockets hamburgers, we've talked over weighty issues down to the Dairy Queen, where I've seen Jeff order a blizzard, a Heath Bar blizzard with extra Heath. At which point my eyes just kind of got all googly, just buggy. Because I guess William Smith was trying to make himself appear folksy. He is anything but. Although I can't help wondering if there's going to be a paycheck coming now. You know, an emolument from Johnny Rockets, Dairy Queen, and who is it? Hershey? No, Hershey makes the score. M&M Mars makes the Heath Bar, maybe? It was beyond weird. Okay. So folks are kind of in touch with what I'm talking about, the anxiety and everything. Somewhere up near Morgantown, Robert says, I know the feeling. It's like being there about 7 a.m. on December 7th, 1941, and seeing the planes coming in and knowing this isn't going to end well, and there's not a damn thing you can do that's going to change anything. So, oh, by the way, I used the word servile, which elicited an immediate response from Tracy. Subject line, servile? Bob, really? Servile? You do mean Uncle Tom, don't you? Well, I'm not going to say that. That would be improper for me to say. I will admit that it came across as rather tin to hear Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, referred to as JF, and I confess that I was surprised that the two people offering positive remarks upon the character and abilities of Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III didn't include the word Mars in front of Jeff. But no, I'm not going to use that phrase, Tracy. It'd be improper of me. I mean, just because they were only brought out as a counterbalance to three intelligent, well-spoken black men who had who felt the pull of conscience to testify against Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, just because the Republicans went out trying to find a couple of black guys who would say nice things about Sessions doesn't necessarily make them Uncle Toms. But it sure did seem servile. Michael in Madison writing, subject line, the Sessions Sessions. Hey, did you catch the bizarre Johnny Rockets and Dairy Queen product placement in the pro-Sessions testimony of the last guy? Brought to you by Carl's Jr. Fuck you, I'm eating. Michael got there. This email actually came in before I started mentioning it. But yeah, I caught it. And Keith writes in and says, subject line, click, click, click. Do you hear that clicking sound, Bob? That clicking sound is the country climbing the hill on the roller coaster. The final click will be on the 20th, and then it'll be a fast trip downhill with no uphill return. Hell, with no rails either. This is the fastest and steepest coaster ever dreamed up, and if I may, I hate freaking roller coasters. Me too, Keith. Me too. I despise them. I've had the feeling for a good while this ride is going straight to hell. Strap in and hold on. Did I say I hate roller coasters? As a matter of fact, you did, and I'm glad you did. So, yeah, that was just fucking weird. The Carl's Jr. and the, well, I mean, and then the Johnny Rockets and Dairy Queen with extra heath, especially in light of the fact that I had a story, it's now since gone, disappeared in the great Windows 10 update. I had a story from last week about a black woman at a Dairy Queen, whose owner called her that word. And when it was complained about, of course, the home office there at Dairy Queen immediately said, well, this certainly does not represent the values of the Dairy Queen Corporation, and we'd like to remind everybody that almost all Dairy Queens are owned by individual franchisees, and, well, golly gee, here at Dairy Queen, we have no control over what our franchisees call people in their restaurants, and but it's scrumptiliumptious! Really? But I got to wondering about William Smith, who was the weird guy with the product placement. And it turns out he's not just some servile black guy who was hired as a token by Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Oh, no. Not even a little bit. Ha-ha. No. This guy is a full-on nut job. It turns out that William Smith, who is now the chief of staff to representing Gary Palmer, and Gary Palmer, in turn, no, not exactly a liberal Democrat. Gary Palmer is a right-wing freak from the 6th Congressional District of Talabama, or Alatrumpa. Mm-hmm. He's a member of the Freedom Caucus. You know them. Comes from Hackleburg, Alabama. Yep. And he's a co-founder of the Alabama Family Alliance, which, of course, means that, you know, I mean, that's Southern conservative, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered code for being, you know, homophobic and racist and pro-gun and all that shit. He replaced 11-term incumbent Spencer Baucus. The Alabama 6th Congressional District, by the way, is right there smack dab in the center of Alabama. Gary Palmer comes from Vestavia Hills, which is a rather wealthy little suburb of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And that's who William Smith has since gone to work for. He's described by the Yellowhammer News, an Alabama blog, as a happy warrior. A little-known Alabamian is conservative's secret weapon in D.C. William Smith grew up in Ozark, Alabama. Got his bachelor's and his law degree at the Capstone, Tuscaloosa. Got a master's degree in library science from UNC Chapel Hill. He's obviously an intelligent man. He was a research librarian at the University of Southern California School of Law. And it was Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III who recommended him for a staff position on the Senate Judiciary Committee, the committee before whom he testified today. Pretty impressive resume, isn't it? Unless it's all just right-wing log rolling. Which it may be. Because he's also a far right-wing loon. It was 2009 when an aide to John McCain gave a speech to a gay conservative group. I know. Try to figure out gay conservatives. Good luck. Self-hating gays? I mean, log cabin Republicans? Who knows? But it was about the time he was being named chief counsel for the Republicans on the Judiciary Committee that a reporter found a blog post that he'd written about Steve Schmidt, who advised the McCain campaign for president. Schmidt had begged Republicans to exit the Dark Ages and support marriage equality. This was something up with which William Smith would not put. On April 20th, he responded that Schmidt would, quickly tell you that he is not advocating that we support 60-year-old men in their desire to rape 8-year-old boys, but he would not classify his opposition as narrow-minded. No, this is a principled position. There's some logic behind it, Schmidt would say. Is Schmidt then going to take his close-minded stump speech to the Bestiality Club? Again, his answer would be no, although there are a group of people who embrace this lifestyle. Could see being gay is a lifestyle to William Smith. Ostensibly, if somebody was to drag some gay people to death behind a pickup truck, William Smith would object to murdering somebody for their lifestyle. Schmidt and other gay lifestyle proponents would say that my opposition is based on the slippery slope approach. I say that is notice how he sets up the straw man. I say that is based on principle, and it is no more close-minded than their position for gay unions. You know, gay steel workers, gay carpenters, gay millwrights, gay sheet metal workers, gay pipe fitters. No. We're talking about marriage here. The difference between me and Schmidt is that I'm not a maverick. I'm guided by something called Christian principles, and I don't need people in California, New York, and Washington to tell me what those principles should be. Mm-hmm. And, he went on in the post and said, I wonder if next week Steve Schmidt will take his close-minded stump speech to a NAMBLA meeting. God damn it. Every time you get one of these homophobes out there talking, sooner or later they're going to come round to NAMBLA. Jesus, you'd think there were more members in NAMBLA than there are the fucking Elks Club. For those unfamiliar with NAMBLA, the acronym is for North American Man-Boy Love Association. So that's the guy who had Johnny Rockets burgers with Jeff, and went to Dairy Queen with Jeff, and saw Jeff order a blizzard, a Heath blizzard with extra Heath. But there's more, because there's always more. February 2009, as the confirmation process was getting started, note I said February 2009, not early January 2009, William Smith was incensed with some of President Obama's nominees. Among other things, William Smith said, President Obama has been very good at covering up the question of whether he was born in the United States. But his cabinet nominees have not found as much success covering up the problems with their backgrounds. So, yeah, you're sitting there and you're going, oh, my, yes, that's right. The Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee called up a black birther homophobe to counter the passionate testimony of John Lewis. Really? They can't help it, can they? A dog returns ever to his vomit, and Republicans are still stinging over that one in their White House. And they're always going to have a few folks who, for the right amount of money, will validate their hypocrisy and their bigotry. Ron in Raleigh writes and says, I think Spike Lee said it best. When commenting on Uncle Slappy Thomas, Spike Lee referred to him as a handkerchief head, chicken and biscuit eating Uncle Tom. Our Jewish brethren, Ron notes, would call Mr. Smith a self-hating Negro. Marty says, if not Uncle Tom, can we use that much meaner term, one that I use frequently to describe Uncle Tom's, and call Mr. William a house blank? I presume Marty means Negro. I don't want to call him any of those things. I simply want to know, I want to note that it is abundantly obvious that William Smith is a bigot, a homophobe, a religious maniac, and should not be trusted with the carcass of a dead skunk. It's amazing. But the whole day, and it feels like every day, is just a parade of amazement and horror. Jesus, jumping Christ. Mm-hmm. Note coming in from Steve in Vermont. Subject line, press conference. I listened to the press conference while driving. I had to pull over. What about a Tom Clancy-type novelist that might dream up a drone operator who gets a conscience and types in Trump Towers? What's coming at us is propagating thoughts that many of us thought we would never have. There are some who think that the entire Golden Showers Gate affair is the intelligence community putting a stream across the Trump golden bow. That it's a warning. There was reference earlier today that in the letter that George H.W. Bush left for Barack Obama, that there were remarks to the effect of, whatever you do, don't piss off the intelligence community. I don't know. We haven't really gotten to an in-depth on the press conference yet. We will. Note coming in from Mike. Can we start referring to the having and practicing right-of-center beliefs as a lifestyle? And see, that's the thing. One doesn't choose to be gay. God knows one doesn't choose to be trans. Look at the number of trans people who have the hell beaten out of them every day in this country, every day, every night, every week, every month, just because they're different. And yet not so different. And the people who beat them and maim them and kill them, and the people who support the people who do the beating and the maiming and the killing, refer to that as a lifestyle. Well, nobody chooses to be trans. Nobody chooses to be gay. Nobody chooses to be lesbian. Nobody chooses to be queer questioning or bi. But by God, these freaks do choose to be the bigots that they are. It's kind of like Nancy Reagan. Nancy Reagan didn't give a good goddamn about the gay community until one of her daughters turned out to be gay. She didn't give a good goddamn damn about the Alzheimer's community until her precious Ronnie had his brains melt inside his fucking skull. It's easy to be a bigot when you choose that lifestyle and surround yourself with people who have also chosen that lifestyle. Ron, in the far, somewhat thawed north, Ron noted, it was about 38 degrees here today, and at least one of my coworkers wore shorts and a Hawaiian shirt to work, but he's weird, even for a Canadian electronic warfare genius. Ron says, regarding Servile versus Uncle Tom, you could simply comment upon his, her very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. Ron adds, I'm glad for the thaw because it will enable me to clear out the 4 inches of solid ice covering my front sidewalk. I've piled about 40 pounds of salt on it since I got home last Wednesday, and it's finally crunchy enough for me to consider taking the ice spud to it. Do you got one of those? We got one of those. Tomorrow when I get back to Casa Ron from the office. Ron also says, I would be very interested to know what the rules are if the POTUS is not able or willing to take the oath of office. Does it automatically go to the designated and unelected vice president? I'm speculating, but I presume so, Ron, because the election has since been certified. It's a real election. Not a single senator would stand up to object to the results, leaving the objecting members of the House hanging out in the breeze. We've been to that movie before. And hell, it would have been symbolic anyway. Because there are a lot of people in this country who are hell-bent, and I do mean hell-bent, on seeing just how much damage can be done. Up in the even more frozen Northwest Territories, our buddy Chris writes, what is impending doom? Doom that is impending. That's how I feel. And that's in the Canadian Northwest Territories. That's how pervasive this is. It is scaring the shit out of the whole world. You know, everybody except Pootie Poot and maybe Benito Cheeto's handlers. So, you want to talk about any of this? You're welcome to. It's about 14 minutes past the hour. And you know the numbers, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. From anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And you're welcome to jump in. First-time callers are always especially welcome. Long-time members of the family community congregation are greeted with joy. And so you're free to jump in. Yeah, Steve from Georgia Stan pointing out, it's a constitutional crisis, Bob. We've never trod these waters before. And it is. No one was willing to admit it. And the silk stockings at places like the New York Times and the Washington Post won't admit it. But we are sure enough, no kidding, in a straight-up constitutional crisis. What do you do when the president that the people didn't choose but who was certified by the Electoral College, is madder than a March hare, and anybody with a half a brain looking at him can tell it. And we're getting ready to turn the government over to him anyway. A constitutional crisis may be defined as a crisis in which every single aspect of the Constitution proves incapable of preventing a disaster. See, Watergate and the Nixon situation has been described as a constitutional crisis. It wasn't. The Constitution was functioning exactly as it was designed to work. A decade later, or a little bit more, when it turned out that Ronald Reagan had no more regard for the Constitution than used toilet paper. Well, Ben Bradley and Catherine Graham over at the Washington Post said, America cannot stand another constitutional crisis. And even then, had impeachment proceedings been begun, it would not have been a constitutional crisis. This, like what happened in 1860, is a constitutional crisis. It is a situation which the Constitution itself is ill able to address. I mean, you've got two avenues now for saving this nation: impeachment and the 25th Amendment. Both of which, in direct contravention of the theory that underpinned the Constitution itself, are not avenues at all. Because once upon a time, when the framers framed the Constitution, they made certain presumptions. They presumed that the people in the government would actually care more about their country than they did their power. And Madison waxed prolific on the issue of faction. George Washington, since he's already been brought up this evening, despised faction. Because Madison in particular recognized that faction was the one thing, more than any other, that posed the greatest single threat to the experiment upon which they were embarking. And faction is where we are. There's no reason for the House of Representatives to impeach Trump, even if it turns out, because he is, that he is a goddamned foreign agent. The House of Representatives will not act. Because the House of Representatives, the Republican majority in control thereof, does not care as long as they get to do their political will. Jesus Christ, if the reanimated zombie corpse of V.I. fucking Lenin was sitting in the White House, the Republicans would not lift a finger as long as V.I. Lenin's zombified reanimated corpse was signing the bills that they sent to his desk. And the Senate, even if the House were to impeach, the Senate would not convict. And even if the Senate tried to convict Chief Justice John Roberts presiding, would throw out the conviction.
This is what it means to have a real, live, honest-to-Jesus constitutional crisis. And they don't come along very often. As crazy as it may sound, this constitutional crisis may actually be more complex and less likely, therefore, to be solved than the constitutional crisis that obtained in 1860. And maybe that's why I feel so sick at heart. Maybe that's why my anxiety is probably higher than it's been in my recent memory. Sure, people are going to march. People are going to protest. And I'm not going to sit here and say it will do no good, but the odds are long against. Because the marches are going to take place in D.C. or maybe New York or Chicago or L.A. Nothing is going to be done that will change the mind of, say, that creep from the Alabama 6th Congressional District. There's not going to be 10,000 people squatted on his lawn making him rethink his conservative family values. No. And the sustained degree of protest that we absolutely need is almost impossible in a place like Washington, D.C., because it is predicated on the idea that there are people out there who can just come, you know, a couple of million people who can just go to D.C. and live on love and live on patriotism and stay there. And not give a damn when the house gets foreclosed on and the car gets repoed. And the lights get turned out and the cable goes off. This is the means by which people in a capitalist economy are quietly enslaved. You cannot make meaningful use of your right under the First Amendment to petition for redress of grievances if all you can afford to do is show up on Saturday and leave on Sunday. I respect everybody who's going up for the Women's March on Saturday, the 21st day of January. But they'll be gone on Sunday. And I think we, by God, have to acknowledge the reality of that. And in Washington, D.C., where it takes nearly an act of Congress to get the media, the jaded, bored, ho-hum, yawning, for-profit media to cover a protest, we are kidding ourselves if we think for an instant that there will be sufficient media coverage of the Women's March on Washington to make it stick in the national consciousness. And this is a constitutional crisis right here, right now. What it will be by June? Hell, what it'll be by February or the end of January, God alone knows. And being as how you know my opinion on the existence of the big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, nobody knows. Hell, nobody knows what the thugs and bully boys of the Trumpanzees will do to the women who march on Saturday the 21st. You don't think that they're just going to ignore it, do you? Fascists don't do that. Fascists teach lessons. Now, I'm not being prophetic. Not predicting. But I am on record as saying that based on past actions, past speeches, past remarks, past behaviors, Donald J. Trump is suffering from some sort of disability, largely mental, that precludes him from fulfilling the duties of the office of President of the United States. And since it takes a majority of members of the cabinet to trigger the 25th Amendment, and since that's going to be the likes of Rex Tillerson and Betsy DeVos and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, and don't kid yourself, they're going to get confirmed that that's not going to happen either. Oh, Hunter Thompson, why'd you have to kill yourself? The hogs are in the tunnel, and they will travel on a road of bones. Ron, in the far frozen north, far thawing north, points out, I think we have to count on the various blue states, especially California, New York, and Massachusetts, to make absolutely every effort to counter the Republicans' bully actions in any and all available courts. Well, based on what was said today at the press conference, there probably will be an absolute raft of lawsuits filed the second that Donald Trump's hand comes off whatever it is he swears on, probably a copy of The Art of the Deal. But the court system is notoriously slow. And the first thing one learns about the law is that the law freely admits that there are many instances in which the law is absolutely incapable of providing meaningful relief. I think what Ron says is true, but that's only good as far as it goes. You cannot sue Donald Trump out of office. You cannot petition for a writ of mandamus to force the House of Representatives to begin impeachment proceedings. Neither can you petition the courts for a writ of mandamus to compel the cabinet to trigger the 25th Amendment. That's why I'm pretty sure we're in a mess the likes of which we are only beginning to comprehend. Well, here we are at the halfway mark of the program. We had we got $340 to raise. We have raised $10 so far. We badly need not to be in a $540 hole come Thorn in the Side Thursday.
$340 is 34 people at $10 a piece, or one at $340, or two at $170, or four at $85. But we badly need not to be in a hole that big and that deep. So hopefully folks will, the plates are still passing, and hopefully folks will press the little button in the bottom of it. We'll take a break, come back to your calls, your conversation, and more on a bizarre day that is only a pluribus unum of an entire shitstorm of bizarre days that are headed in our direction. This is a home of the resistance. This is a no collaboration zone. This is the horn. And, well, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Boop, bop, boop, bop. Boop, bop, boop, bop. Boop, 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 boop.
Way down boop, south boop, in Birmingham, boop, I mean boop, south boop, in Alabama's an old place boop, where people go to dance the night away.
It's a junction where the town folk meet at each function in their best. They'll greet you.
Ba-do-ba-ba-do-bop. 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 Why, why, why?
And the bird of wind,
You can't say that I'm not trying to lift the mood a little bit. The Manhattan Transfer, Tuxedo Junction. Yeah, I admit the Birmingham reference was what triggered that inside my old DJ brain. Note coming in from Michael. Marching, petitioning, and protesting. People are one or more of the following: too lazy, too ignorant, uninformed, too busy, too enslaved by debt, too self-centered, too unaffected, detached for too long. And then there's always too far away. Yeah, it's a reality. Subject line, horror snow. One thing is obvious. When Donald Trump is away from his favorite tweeting stool and put on a short leash for his first walk in public, he is nothing but the empty pot that he so desperately longs not to be. Such an illiterate and ill-bred display would be laughable if it were not the instant buffoonery of the U.S. presidency we're talking about. Words fail, but picture something like the most hideous monster of your childhood dread, stumbling out of the darkest closet, foot in the bucket, lampshade on the head. Yeah, I know. Funny monsters. Regards, Steve. In China. Let's run over to the stress line real quick and check in with Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim. Jim. Hang on here. Stand by. Hey, Jim, stand by. Okay, let's try that again. Are you there, Jim?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are.
Okay. Yeah, it's a fine mess the guy shows in. I mean, but doesn't surprise me. I mean, I hope somehow they can, the Republicans come to the census, which is like a wet dream on steroids. I don't think that's going to happen, but
I don't think that's physically possible to happen, Jim.
No, I got you. I got you. Well, I think it's kind of out of our, you know. I mean, you can write your Congress. I mean, it's weird. Let's say, like I was on the internet and I looked. Big surprise that it's happening, and it just happened to come up. It's on Twitter and. Both, surprise, surprise, Louisiana senators voted, you know, for the crap. And I voted for the guy, you know, they had that election, and he got 48%. But, I mean, I'm to the point where I don't even trust elections anymore, okay?
Well, look, that's been part of a long, and maybe you disagree, but I'm going to say it anyway, that's part of a long disinformation and distrust campaign that we now know the Russians have been engaged in.
My point is, for all I know, Hillary could have won. I mean, she came out with 3 million votes, and I understand the Electoral College and all that crap. And I even understand why Obama, even if he wanted to try and go with just a popular vote, anything he would have introduced would have been shot down in the House.
Well, I mean, the president can't do that. I mean, we're talking about the operation of the Constitution, Jim.
Right. No, I understand that, but I mean, even if somehow he could have gotten enough support, the mere fact that his pigment was a little bit darker than, you know, most of the congressmen and senators is gonna, 86 that, you know. I wish I could be more optimistic. I'm not, and it's really weird. I'm a little bit older than you, 57, when I got you, by three years, I think.
I'll be 54 the last day of this month.
You'll be 54 when?
The last day of the month.
Well, happy birthday if I don't talk to you before then. But,
well, thank you.
It's, I feel sorry for kids, and I'm glad I don't have any. But the worst thing is, they're just going to grow. And what I've noticed, this goes back when I was like in my 20s. I remember when they were talking about, oh, well, you better be Social Security. I mean, I guess it was right around when Reagan got in office. Social Security is not going to be around. And that's bullshit. I mean, because basically all you got to do is take the cap off.
You take the cap off and Social Security is rock solid, sound as the pound, until, like,
for like 100 years.
I know, but try and explain that to most people. They're fucking clueless. I just get really pissed when I think about that. You know?
And there's a lot of stuff I get really pissed about when I think about it.
What's that?
There's a lot of stuff I get pissed about when I think about it.
And yeah, you know, I mean, and I'm on, like I said, I'm on disability now, and everything's good right now. But I don't think they're going to cut it. I think they'd be cutting their own throats, but they're maniacs. You don't know what these freaks will do. Now, you know, I think they're out of control, Bob.
That's what I meant, Jim, talking about a constitutional crisis. A constitutional crisis occurs when the entire system of government goes out of control. And yeah, that's the only way you can describe a federal government, an executive branch, headed by a maniac that neither the legislative nor the judicial branch is willing to stop.
Right, but, I mainly go by Twitter, okay? And I don't believe everything I read on it by anybody. You know, I believe some sources a lot more than I believe others. Some people were kind of indicating, and I don't remember, I don't have everything written down. This isn't scripted. But that, you know, the Republicans are going to kind of catch a clue that if they fuck over Social Security and other things, they're reaching too far. I think they're going to try to have to do it incrementally. Somebody I was talking to, a little bit older than me, they're not quite retired yet, but they were saying that, and he's worried about his Social Security.
How's he vote?
Oh, he's a Democrat. He voted for Hillary.
Well, then that's not the guy you got to worry about. What you got to find out is how the good God-fearing Bible-believing upstanding evangelical fundamentalist amosexual Republicans feel about having their Social Security taken away. And you know what? They're okay with it, Jim. Well, it's God's will.
Well, I got you, Bob. What do you think? Tomorrow? I mean, it's raining right now. There's a 20% chance of rain. It's been raining the last 6 hours. That's Louisiana stand for you. But so what? You want me to go door to door?
I mean, it's up to you. It just depends on how much free time you've got and how bored you are, really.
This is Louisiana stand. I reiterate that, you know.
Right. So you don't have to go door to door. You know damn good and well that what I'm telling you is the truth, Jim.
Oh, I know. Actually, I was talking to a girl just a little while ago, and she sees the light, you know. But it's like, it seems like it's far and few between, and you know, there's a lot of fucking stupid people out there. I'll go back to that line.
No, look, goddamn. I mean, when Paul Ryan does what Paul Ryan has promised he's going to do, and it goes through the Senate, and the Senate says, yup, and it shows up on dipshit's desk, and he gets out his bill signing crayon and puts it in his tiny little hands and signs it. Well, then the Republicans will all say, see, he took away my money, but he's making America great again, and he's giving all of his hotel rent to the Treasury. Ain't America great again?
Right. So, I mean, technically, they could just cut 20%, 30% off it. Just out of the blue, out of the
technically, Jim, they can do anything they want, and the Trumpanzees will hop up and down on the balls of their little feet and bounce off their little knuckles, and they will grin like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush and holler, "America great again!"
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. I was hearing some economical thing. I mean, it's economical stuff. It's kind of, they can't continue this rally. I mean, it's 1929 all over again. I don't know how long they can falsify it. I mean, I know they did it with Bush Jr. and they couldn't make it last long enough. And then, you know, And we had Obama. You know?
Yeah.
They crashed just about a year. They wanted to last like another year, and then it started crashing. And I remember because I had my money. When I had some money, I had it in a 401k. And I noticed it was dropping a couple of hundred points a day. And like the second, third day, I'm like, well, let me make sure I got my money in money market so you don't get fucked over. And I think I already did, but I just said, make sure all my money is in a money market. And it wasn't that much, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that much money, but.
But it was enough. It was something. And they stole it, right?
I didn't lose that much in the grand scheme of things. It was like maybe 1% of that or whatever. It was a while back. That's when I used to have money and dreams.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm glad you called, Jim, because we had a question the other night. The folks worrying about you. You know, that's what it means.
No. You had a little prayer circle going for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We did some anointing, did some tongue speaking and serpent handling, just making sure you're all right.
You know that didn't work for atheists, Bob.
Oh, sure it did. You called, didn't you?
I guess maybe there's that itching on my leg. I think that was it. Yeah. No, I just started trying to get through, and I, you know, because I've cried once or twice. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get through. So, all right, I'm going to let you go and let whoever's going to do the next call. And,
I'm glad you did. Hang in there.
As Neil Young would say, keep on rocking in the free world.
Or this one, for that matter. Take it easy, Jim. Our buddy Jim, calling from Louisiana, Stan. Hey, good news. $340 fundraising goal just got knocked down to $230. Thank you very kindly to Gary in Texas. Thank you to Michael. And thank you very kindly to Kitty in Boston. Kitty said, I cannot lose the horn. At the very moment, I need you guys the most. Peace, love, and to everyone, and above all, resist. We're trying. Of course, you know, we're talking amongst ourselves, and we have to acknowledge that. But we've got to give each other uplift and support so that maybe we can spread the resistance. Oh, by the way, courtesy of Carol Baker, I just got the weather forecast for a week from Friday. Inauguration Day weather update, 100% chance of showers. Thank you, Carol. golden showers. And now, of course, everybody's pretending that none of this is real. None of this happened. It can't possibly. No, it's unsubstantiated, goddammit. I mean, because, you know, Trump had a press conference and he said it was crap. No, actually, Don, it was piss. That's the problem. It's piss. We don't know about the video the Russians have of you giving somebody a rusty trombone or a Cleveland steamer. I mean, come on, look at the guy. All you have to do is look at him and you know he's he's twisted. He has to be. Remember how Michael Jordan got in gambling trouble? Remember how Tiger Woods' life fell apart? Well, when you've got everything in the world you want, and you've got everything in the world you can have anything you want, well, that's when the weird stuff comes in. That's when the gambling problem arises. That's when the philandering problem happens. And remember, God damn! I mean, the for-profit media this afternoon had one question to ask. But they couldn't quite bring themselves to ask such an indelicate thing because it's not genteel. And after all, they're the elite Washington press corps. So not one of them could stand up and say, Mr. Trump, Have you ever participated in any way, shape, form, or fashion in urine sports with prostitutes? And so the for-profit media can holler, oh, he denied it, he denied it. No, he didn't. He never, not once, denied it. In fact, there was a whole shitload of non-denial denials. Like when he was asked specifically, has anyone in your campaign had contact with the Russians? And then they asked a second question, which he then answered evasively and didn't answer the first one, the important one, at all. Not saying, just saying. Let's run over and talk to Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Why couldn't you say Uncle Tom, Bob? Come on now.
Because it would be wrong for me to say Uncle Tom.
Okay, I'm going to say it. Several times. Motherfucking Uncle Tom. How about that? Or better yet. See, this is the perfect time. Remember that clip that I sent you about the brother that went on the rant of calling somebody a coon?
Oh, yeah.
The definition of coon. This would be a really probably good time to play that clip. Because, I didn't watch. I had my own session. I was in therapy today. So I didn't get to watch the sessions, but unfortunately, while I was eating breakfast, I was at Denny's, and they had the TV going. Fortunately, it was muted, and so I saw him going off on, you know, saying about, you know, because it had to, but it's a closed captioning, and going off about, you can't say this, you know, and threatening that, you know, this kicking people out and that they won't be able to, you know, if they don't do what he wants or says what he wants, then they will no longer be welcomed in the White House. How do you do that, Bob?
See, you're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, that's true. I'm asking you on the premise that you actually know what's about to happen, because I think we are all in that. Like, who said about what is that click, click, clicking that we're hearing?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was such a good analogy, because this is one of those reasons why we listen, you know, people listen to the horn.
Yeah, that was our buddy Keith.
Hey, Keith. Because, see, we listen to the horn because there's sometimes we can't quite put our feelings into words. And then, of course, we listen to the show and one or two people, or maybe three or four, maybe everybody, says that thing or puts it in such a succinctly that we're like, that's what I'm feeling. You know, that moment where right before we all have to get to Thor's Dane Dart. That moment when, like you said, the one about, you know, who said about, you know, 7 a.m. on December 7th, 1941.
Yeah, that was Robert up near Morgantown.
See? We got some pretty freaking smart people in our horn family. Like I said, I'm trying to be the joy, you know, the keeper, a purveyor of joy. And you know, when you watch,
but you got to admit that's a challenge, Tracy.
Oh, dude, seriously, I was in tears today in session. I. You know, and my therapist was really like, well, what's going on? I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Well, he can't say, but I'm like, dude, seriously, we're 9 days out before Armageddon. Before, you know, what is that song? It's the end of the world as we know it. But I'm not fine.
Yeah, that's the part. Yeah, nobody's like, fine.
I'm not fine. I'm not fine. I'm hanging on the thread about the strength of, I don't know, a gnat's hair. It's just when you listen to, I didn't hear, because I didn't want to throw up, so I watched it, you know, as little as I could. But when I got home, Jan's like, because we both watched our president's farewell address. When that address, that was, as I'm sitting listening to him, I'm like, where were this, the man that was talking last night, where has he been? That's the man I voted for in 2008.
You watched it too, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I watched it all, and
I watched it. Let me preface this by saying that I've already read several essays by real progressives that, of course, want to remind us that Barack Obama's a goddamn war criminal. Goddamn, he's just like the rest of them. Oh, holy shit! Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. I've read a bunch of that shit today. Because he didn't personally give. He didn't.
You truly do take him for the team, don't you?
That's Jesus. My job. Right? But no, I mean the so-called hardcore progressives are all very, very pissed off because Barack Obama did not give each and every one of them a fucking cookie.
And hence, this is why we are in the shit storm that we're in.
As I said earlier, you can with regard to one of these articles, you can file it as Exhibit 1 for why progressives lose so goddamned always.
Yeah.
But I'd be lying if I didn't say that I had a problem last night, because I did.
Oh, I had a problem with several things. Let's see if we.
You know, when he told the audience to shut the fuck up. No, I mean he didn't say that.
Yeah, when they started booing.
Yeah, when they started booing Trump incoming. You know, I want to know something. I mean, you know, maybe, Tracy, it would be highly reassuring to my white ass if Barack Obama would just come out and say, listen, you know, I've talked to him. A whole bunch of this is a big fucking show. He's just another goddamn Republican. He's going to do the same thing that Republicans always do. They're going to loot the country. They're going to fuck you. But he's not, you know, he's not a Russian agent, okay? And he's not mentally ill. And his brain isn't fucking Swiss cheesed by spirochetes. It's okay. Y'all just calm down. I got the inside skinny on this shit. Most of this is just drama. Now, y'all got used to no drama Obama. This motherfucker ain't nothing but drama, but it's all going to be okay as it can be. That would help, Tracy.
Yeah, but we didn't get that last night. Because that bothered the hell out of me when he's like, you know, the peaceful transition of power. I'm like, there's nothing peaceful about what's about to happen. I mean, it's, you know, there's not going to be a peaceful transition. He's already started. Didn't he fire a whole bunch of people? Didn't he, you know, telling, you know, ambassadors that they got to get the fuck out?
He is his team of theocrats, thugs. Pimps, and thugs has already done things that haven't been done in a transition in 50 years.
Exactly. So I disagree
And today,
president.
You didn't watch it, but I'm going to stand up to the Russians, and they're going to respect me more than they've ever respected any American president. Oh, really? More than they respected John F. Kennedy when they stood the fuck down and turned their ships around and sailed away and took their thumbs off the goddamn button? They're going to respect you more than they did Kennedy, you little pissant? Because he is. He's a pissant.
He is. He's a bully. He's a tyrant. He's a crybaby. I need a thesaurus, really, for all the adjectives that he is. And there's one thing that he is not. He is not at all presidential. Because Trumple thin skin. Listening, you know.
Carol Baker.
On those. Carol Baker, thank again. Carole Baker. This is why she is queen of the minions. When you listen to his tirades, just the fact that the man goes on Twitter fits, you know, because I was waiting. Because, you know, after last night's, you know, farewell speech, and I'm watching this black man when he was talking to his wife and his daughters. You know what it reminded me think of? Back during slavery times, because of how horribly the people have talked about his wife and his children. And he, not that he was powerless to do something about it,
he rose above it.
He rose above it, but it just made me think of during slavery times, or even during Jim Crow or what have you, when black men had to stand and watch their wives and their daughters be disrespected by white men.
And, you know, John Lewis talked about some of that today. He talked about the step-off rule. And he talked about the eyeball rule. And he said, we cannot go backward. We must go forward.
You know, we how many black men were killed? Emmett Till, a child, he was a little boy. And he was murdered, savagely beaten. And because
I want people to see what they did to my boy.
They did to my baby, exactly. There was no embalming, there was no, you know, so I'm pretty sure the body was decomposing. So I'm pretty sure there was a stench of death in the church. I want people to see. I want people to know just about these respectable white folks. You know, I'm listening when I'm because as a black person, and knowing the history of this country, knowing what it's like when you cannot speak up for fear of retribution. And when I say retribution, I mean death. I mean a beating. I mean your house bombed, your house burned down, a cross burning in your front yard, retribution. I was, you know, I'm reading in my history book, because like I said, I'm taking black history. And so we're in during the Reconstruction and the white lash of what the white Southerners did, because they just did not want, they felt that black people were so inferior that how dare they be, you know, just think that, you know, how that they should have a place in this country. How dare they think that they should even, you know, let alone govern. So then we had that, what they call, and I know you know it, the time of redemption, Bob, because, you know, that's when, you know, that whole thing about the South rising again and us white, pure Christian white folks putting us, those colored Negroes, back in their places. And that's when you have the rise of the Ku Klux Klan.
Which comes as a response to Reconstruction and comes in parallel, in tandem, with the rise of the glorious, noble lost cause. Because see, that lost cause bullshit did not happen at Appomattox Courthouse. The veterans, the shoeless, half-starved veterans who were marching with Lee at that point in time, and would have marched into hell as long as he was in front of them, they knew their ass was beat.
Exactly.
They knew they were never going to win. And a lot of the Southern leadership knew they were beat from jump. But they did it anyway.
Anyway.
Because treason.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears with you real quick, and I'm going to run here in a minute because I want to give other people a chance to jump in. But NBC seems to have taken the lead in attacking the disclosure of this stuff we discussed last night that includes the golden showers and whatnot.
Oh, they're attacking it?
Yeah. Joke Toad about had a conniption on the editor of
Raw Story?
On the editor of BuzzFeed.
BuzzFeed, right.
Yeah. And accused him of publishing fake news. Because, of course, that's what Trump called it.
Right. Isn't it funny how it's fake news when it's about them?
I thought Joke Toad's head was going to come off. He's mad at Ben Smith, the editor of BuzzFeed, went off on him. You just published fake news, but then a little bit later. He said, I'm struck at how normal crazy looked.
What?
But here's the kicker. He actually mentioned in a discussion with Brian Williams on MSNBC. You didn't see it, so you don't know that Donald Trump declared in that press conference today that he is going to be president for the next 8 years.
Yeah, because I was wasn't listening, but I was watching your Twitter rant, and I saw that.
And Joke Toad didn't even bat an eyelash over it. And there was so much weird stuff, like. They trotted out a whole bunch of manila file folders and put them on a table next to the podium.
What was that all about?
Well, it wasn't a handout for the press corps. It was supposedly all the business documents that they were going to avoid conflicts of interest over. And that's why they hauled out the lawyer from the law firm to read a prepared statement that was pretty obvious, had words from Donald Trump in it. And she comes from a law firm that was voted best law firm in Russia.
Oh, but there's no Russian influence.
And so, and here's the fun part. So after it was all over, one reporter went up to try to look in the files and got his little hand smacked. And was told that those are confidential documents, and those are confidential documents not to be seen by you.
But didn't they say that? But wait, hold up, wait, because you took one for the team and you listened to the whole press conference. Did he not just tell the press corps that those documents were proof that he's, you know, that if all his business dealings are going to be?
It's proof. It's just that nobody gets to see if it really is proof.
See the proof, like his tax returns.
Yeah, you can't have his tax returns either, because tax returns don't tell you anything anyway. You need to look at the Election Commission filings. He said that today too.
But probably
the highlight of the whole thing, apart from the fact that nobody in the Johnny on the Spot elite press corps asked the one question that needed to be asked.
There was no high. You mean there was a highlight?
Okay, low light. Was when Trump went ape shit on the reporter from CNN, Jim Acosta, who tried to answer a question. I got the audio here. Let's share it, shall we?
Let's share, shall we? Please do.
Since you're attacking us, can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization.
You are attacking
terrible.
Our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance
terrible.
To ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can
quiet.
You state, can,
quiet.
Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically,
she's asking a question.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give
no, I'm
us
not
a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you state categorically?
You are fake news.
Sir,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically that nobody... No, Mr. President-elect, that's not
go
appropriate.
Ahead.
President Obama...
So guess what? There was only one person there who was being rude. And that's that fucking twit that's going to be president of the United States.
Right.
Okay.
Over-talking people.
So get this, though.
But
guess who he called? Guess who he called on after that little tantrum?
No, please do tell.
He called on a correspondent from that website that rhymes with light and fart, that keeps its nose buried up the neo-Nazi's ass.
And that's,
you know what that question was? Yeah, and here's what that question was.
Oh,
Sieg Heil, Mr. President-elect. No, he didn't say that. With all the problems that we've seen throughout the media over the course of the election, what reforms do you recommend for this industry here? How can we better suck your tiny... Never mind.
I think I just threw up a little in my mouth.
Sorry.
Thank you, Bob, for that. Oh, now I'm going to go put hot pokers in my eyes.
I know. Shower with bleach.
I don't even think bleach is strong enough, Bob.
But here's another thing. You know that one picture of naked melanoma where she's got her hand over her crotch and there are shadows behind her and it's sort of done in a sepia tone? You've seen the picture, right? She's standing up. This isn't the one on the rug. She's standing up, naked as the day she was born, with her hand groping her crotch. A long time ago, I saw that photograph and I said, you know, that photo of melanoma, the way the shadows are there, it looks like she's either got a tail or she's taking a piss.
OMG.
I mean, it's out there. Standing naked Melania will probably get it for you. But she does.
I wouldn't be, again, like I said, I used to get paid a lot of money to do things to white guys. It was kind of fun. But you do what you got to do. And you know what? I think she's probably saying, this is why you think everybody's like, why is she staying in New York? Would you want to be around him? She has a legitimate excuse not to have to be around him anymore.
Oh,
even
I know.
Though every other president's wife is taking their kids out of school.
Well, at least we could take solace in knowing, as John Fox pointed out to me a little bit ago, he said, this is just so tragic and hilarious. Our post-authentic world is complete. Wow. The search for quality entertainment at the inauguration has finally yielded results. Tom Barrack, Trump's inaugural committee chief, tempered expectations Tuesday, insisting Trump doesn't care that A-list celebrities aren't interested in palling around with him on inauguration day. We're fortunate in that we have the greatest celebrity in the world, which is the president-elect, Barrack said. So what we've done instead of trying to surround him with what people consider A-listers is we're going to surround him with the soft sensuality of the place. It's much more poetic cadence than having a circus-like celebration that's a coronation.
A circus?
Soft sensuality.
Sensuality.
You know, when the hookers start
peeing
for you.
Soft sensuality. And I love that with the yellow journalism earlier. I'm like,
yeah, but guess what the soft sensuality is?
Please tell me.
They have locked in America's number one Bruce Springsteen cover band, the B Street Band.
You mean Beyonce and Jay-Z aren't going to be there? You mean Kanye's not going to be there?
Sorry, no.
Well, I thought Kanye was, I thought they were homies.
I did. You're going to enjoy this a little bit. No, you're not. So the junior senator from Arkansas's name is Tom Cotton. Kind of like what Carol Baker said earlier. Sessions says his name is why he's called a racist. And Carol said, "Well, what's wrong with a fine name like Senator Jim Crow Klansman McSlaver Sessions III?" Well, Tom Cotton didn't like what Cory Booker said today in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee at all.
Oh, because he was going around being all uppity?
Right, because he was being uppity. Cory Booker said, among other things, law and order without justice is unobtainable. They are inextricably tied together. If there is no justice, there is no peace. In many times in his career, Sessions has demonstrated a hostility toward these convictions. Okay. Cory Booker also has a campaign history of talking.
No justice, no peace.
Right. But Cory Booker, has told some campaign stories about a character by the name of T-Bone. but nonetheless, Cotton knows about the T-Bone stories. And Tom Cotton said, Cory Booker attacks on Jeff Sessions are so far-fetched, I half expected his make-believe friend T-Bone to be the next witness.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God.
It said the senator whose last name is Cotton.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right.
It's a beautiful
so
thing.
You're talking about T-Bone, and your last name is Cotton. I love irony. How so much of it is wasted.
I know. Tracy, it has been a lovely conversation. I thank you for...
As always. Let's do a $25 challenge.
Well, that's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful because we've made some real progress. We are actually down to...
are you trying to add up in your head?
$190. We got $190 to go. And thanks very kindly to Chris for jumping in from the Northwest Territories, frozen though it be. We got $190 to go in fundraising this evening. So how much of a challenge?
$25.
$25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Tracy. Tracy's got the next $25 if somebody else has $25 to put in front of it. And maybe that'll start a match-a-lanche. I still like that word. I'm proud of it. Tracy, have yourself a...
say it one more time. Match-a-lanche.
Match-a-lanche?
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, match-a-lanche. M-A-T-C-H-A-L-A-N-C-H-E. Match-a-lanche.
Of doing homework and reading about, you know, Reconstruction and how wonderful white people treated black folks. So, yay. Yeah.
All right, then. You have yourself a lovely evening. And just, you know, don't be like me. Don't get freaked out, okay?
No, I'm going to be okay. I just have those moments of freaked outness, and then I center myself and I'm okay. It just takes a moment. That's all.
I know.
Because I'm human. All right, my love. You have a great rest of the evening. I can't wait to listen to the rest of the show.
All right. You take it easy, Tracy. Talk to you soon.
Night.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver from somewhere on the 6 and 7/8 on the way to the 405 to the 12 and 2/3 in Southern California. Let's keep it rolling and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Bob.
Are we having fun?
Oh, we're having a great deal of fun. And here's my advice. I normally only give advice to people who are happier than I am, and I just cannot find too many of those people. But for those who are tempted to freak out over the current state of things, here's what you do. Go whole hog with it. Get yourself a little party hat and a horn and that thing that you spin, that noisemaker thing, and set the table, make a big old cake, have punch, have little buckets of nuts with those butter mints interspersed, and just whoop it up. Just have a freak out party. And before long, you won't be so freaked out anymore. You'll shift from freak outedness into party mode and invite all your friends. Make it a gift giving moment. And your mind will just shift.
Pre-shelled pistachios? Can there be pre-shelled pistachios? I love the pre-shelled pistachios.
It's your party. You can have any damn thing you want.
Hot okay? Damn. Hookers, golden showers, some bitch.
Wait, hold on. You're not running for president, young man. You're.
Damn it.
Tracy raised a great point. She always does. But my little ears perked up when she was talking about the speech last night. And I kept wondering that myself, you know. This speech, this should have been the tone throughout This should have been the tone in Obama's farewell address last night, should have been his tone throughout the course of his administration. Don't relent. Don't give up on these bastards, you know. And sooner or later, it'll click. The penny will drop for at least some people, and they'll get engaged, and maybe they'll inspire people to remain engaged. I think it all goes back to the fact that he didn't want to come across as the angry black man. So he put a governor on it. He put a regulator on it, and he's a measured human being. He's no drama Obama. I get that, but he could have extended himself and taken it beyond just giving brilliant speeches, you know. And that was my thought. It was a great speech. I enjoyed it. It made me laugh. It made me cry. It made me think. But most of all, it made me sad to know what might have been, you know.
Yeah, I too was struck with a sense of, pathos.
Yeah, that's the word.
Remorse. But it extended past Obama. It takes in the American people too, Scott. If we had only, because there was a whole bunch of people in this country who were damned well determined not to let that man do all the things that white presidents had done. And so consequently, you get the teabagger Congress. I can't imagine what it would be like to be inside Barack Obama's mind, because he too knows better than anybody else what he would like to have seen America become on his watch. I mean, I think about simple things that are prosaic in other countries, Scott. Early on in his first term, he proposed getting really, really serious about passenger rail in this country. And instead of chuffing and clacking and rolling and bouncing and slamming across the country on Amtrak, and I have experienced that, and it's real. Riding Amtrak on freight rails is no damn fun. But he just wanted us to have better rail travel. And the goddamn Republicans said, oh, fuck no, we can't have viable rail travel.
And what would that have meant? It would have put thousands of people to work in high-paying jobs.
Jesus Christ! Lay it. You know, there's all kinds of abandoned right-of-way out there where we could build high-speed rail.
Yeah, it would have put thousands of people to work in high-paying, good-quality jobs with benefits. It would have improved our infrastructure. That's a big key word in this last election cycle. And it would have given people an opportunity to have an alternate means of travel. And what would that have done? That would have helped cut down on the threat of global warming.
But because of racism, we can't run the risk that he might do so many great things that he winds up being another part of that blasted rock in South Dakota.
Well, then there's the notion, it's amazing what you can get accomplished when you don't care who gets the credit. Okay? But that's the last thing they wanted. And it goes back and forth in cycles. When the Democrats are in charge, the Republicans don't want them to do anything worthwhile. When the Republicans are in charge, the Democrats don't want them to do anything worthwhile. And it's that factionalism that you alluded to earlier. And we literally cut off the nose of our own damn futures merely out of spite. It's insanity. It's insanity. If there were a doctor on duty, more than a few of us would be in the coats with long sleeves and in the rooms with inflatable wallpaper. You know, it's self-inflicted. The entire 90% of the problems that we deal with in this country or fail to deal with are self-inflicted. And if we could get our noses out of our navels and our heads out from our asses for 10 fucking consecutive minutes, we might be able to actually behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works for us all. And if I'm a cockeyed optimist, then goddammit, so be it. You know?
Yeah, but I know, and I get what you're saying, but it's not like he insisted that we call it Obama rail. Shit, he didn't insist we call it Obamacare. The stupid right-wing bastards hung that on him.
Yeah. And you raised a good point when you were talking about Chuck Todd talking about fake news coming from BuzzFeed. That was today, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't see it today, but what I saw last night really caused me to sit up and take notice. I think he was talking with, it might have been Brokaw. It was someone, but Chuck Todd definitely said words to this effect, that he was going on and on about this P-gate thing, okay? Everything has to have gate after it, any scandal ever since Watergate, the granddaddy of gates. But this P-gate thing, he goes on and on about it, and then he says to whoever it was on the panel with him last night that NBC, Universal, Comcast, whatever they're calling themselves now, has a business relationship, an investment partner relationship with who? With BuzzFeed. And then he made all of these noises about how there is a firewall of separation between the NBC News division, so-called, and these upstarts over at BuzzFeed, who are probably coming closer to doing something that approaches journalism than NBC has done in decades. You know, it's a wonder I don't set myself crazy. As my great-great-aunt Emma used to say, boy, you're going to set yourself crazy. You know? Yeah.
And by the way, we've had a note from Steve in China who said, please heed the difference regarding the current chat. President Obama is a statesman. Donald Trump is what the term empty suit is for.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I understand the Secret Service has got a new security code name for Trump.
Yes.
In all caps, dramatically spelled out, chickpea.
Yeah, that's what Carol Baker asked earlier in the evening. What's the difference? What's the difference between a lentil and a chickpea?
And I just sent you something before I called. I put it on my Facebook last night. The old Dipper has checked in from the great beyond to comment on Trump's Russian hooker golden shower scandal. And there's a picture of Reagan with his hand out as if to say halt. And the caption, easy there, Donnie. That's not what I meant by trickle down.
Yeah, I know. It's been a whole day full of that tinkle down economics.
Yeah.
My favorite, though, of course, came from a man who has quickly proven himself to be quite possibly America's quickest wit. I'm talking about George Takei, who tweeted last night, tinkle, tinkle, little czar, Putin put you where you are.
Yeah, I like that.
Tinkle,
like that.
Tinkle, little czar, Putin put you where you are.
Now, here's my question for you. Let me shift over to the quick question to Uncle Bob situation. Now, I'm somewhere between irretrievably stupid and brightest crayon in the box. I'm somewhere on that continuum, and it varies from day to day.
Yeah, it's pretty broad continuum when you, yeah.
Well, I'm somewhere in that scale. My question to you is, And ever since this story broke, I've been trying to get my head around it, and I can't make sense of it. Because on the one hand, Trump is catching heat because he's praising Putin as a leader, even though we know Putin's horrific record, okay? And now we've got these intelligence-connected folks. One guy, I believe, was a British intelligence guy who has put out this story or has said that he's found this these reports that the Russians have on Trump a lot of dirty dirt, okay, or wet dirt, okay, as the case may be. And they're using that as leverage against him. What are the mechanics of this entire mechanism? Because I just don't get what's going on. I mean, earlier I think you mentioned that the intelligence agencies, U.S. intelligence agencies, may be sending a shot across Trump's bow, warning him, careful there, we know stuff. Like Hoover used to do, he had files on everybody in government and entertainment back in, when he was running the FBI. I just have trouble sorting it out, and I'm getting absolutely no help from the so-called mainline, you know, mainstream journalists.
Well, NBC is now reporting that the reason that the two-page summary of the dossier was included in that briefing last week was as a means of showing Trump the difference between raw intel and analysis. That's there. That's what NBC says the excuse for is for doing it was. But the
he had a chance in hell of actually getting that distinction.
Well, I mean, they still have to try. I mean, remember, Richard Clark was called in on September 11th, 2001 by Dim Leader and said, Clarky, I want you to go and find me some evidence that Saddam was behind this. And so on September 12th, he comes in and he says, Mr. President, there is no evidence Saddam had anything to do with this attack. Well, you're not looking hard enough. Go and find me some more. Go look some more. Don't quit till you find me some evidence that Saddam did this. He tried to kill my daddy. Okay?
Jesus. Yeah, I remember that.
So, you know, the intelligence community has to try to do its job. The political appointees are different from the career civil servants, the career intelligence people. You know, Valerie Plame was career civil service intelligence. Maybe not civil service, but career intel. And Scooter Libby, at the behest of Dick Cheney, outed her for trying to quietly go about the business of saying the yellow cake rumor is nothing but trash.
He said yellow. Bob said yellow.
Damn it.
Sorry.
Goddess of Irony is all over this one. The rubber chickens are yellow, too.
Yeah, they sure are.
So, what we do know is that this dossier was all over Washington, D.C. Everybody knew it except the American people.
Yeah, for months. The media...
It extended so far that the FBI went to the FISA court, which routinely grants goddamn warrants to people to the snoop services, so they can listen in on Ahmed Mohammed's phone calls and get his auntie's secret recipe for fucking hummus. But they would not give a warrant to the FBI to surveil four Trump campaign operatives that the FBI was pretty goddamn sure were having secret contact with Russian agents. Okay, so there's that. This whole report has not been discredited.
No, that's the interesting thing.
It's been challenged. Trump did not deny it because he wasn't asked the right question. You have to ask the right question to get the answer you're after, and the Johnny-on-the-spot elite press corps couldn't quite bring themselves, Scott, to ask Trump if he'd ever played pee-pee games.
Well, part of that.
So, wait. Because I'm trying to answer your question. There's one more thing. The BBC, in a radio broadcast today, has noted that the former MI6 spook who found all this shit at the behest of Republicans and a couple of Democrats, but mainly Republicans opposed to Trump. Trump blamed the Democrats today, but it was Republicans. Well, the BBC had a guy on today who said the rumors of the allegations, or whatever you want to call them, have been circulating for a number of months now. I saw the report compiled by the former British intelligence officer back in October. He is not, and this is the crucial thing, the only source for this. Mm-hmm. So there are actual multiple sources for the golden showers and all the financial hoop-de-doo that's in that dossier. And I want to add a caveat to this, Scott. There may be more come out. The golden showers thing may be diversionary. It may be a means of trying to take heat off Trump. But I want you to think about something. I want you to think about when Trump said, "You know, my daughter Ivanka is so hot. If she wasn't my daughter, I'd date her." He said that about her when she was a teenager? Maybe even underage? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the convention when she walked out and he tried to grope her bottom? Okay? Remember the picture of her and of her as an underage teenager and him sitting on the outdoor sculpture of the two parrots copulating?
I remember one of, wasn't it her on his knee?
There's and another, yeah, there's that one too. Punky knows about the copulating parrots. I heard him. Yeah, see, you hear it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bob, I remember that. That was hot.
Wait a minute. Turnabout is fair play.
Oh, I'm getting a jingle. Well, that Punky's getting a jingle.
Yeah, you and Punky both. That's not a cowbell. That's some Oriental Asian temple-type bells that my grandmother used to have on her door.
But what I'm trying to get at is there's a shit ton of smoke here, and there's probably a fire here, and don't be surprised if somewhere down the road we don't find out that the Russians have video of Donald Trump having sex with a verified underage girl. Like, say, maybe 13 or so.
I'd be willing to bet actual money, and I don't have a lot of it to bet, but I would definitely bet that something like that is going to come out sooner or later.
Because as Garry Kasparov, definitely not a member of the Big Bad Vladdy Daddy fan club, put it on Twitter, he said, gambling and sex are two of the biggies that the KGB always used for leverage. And Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is KGB, even though they've changed the name of the secret police in Russia to the FSB. And then there's Trump, who tried to explain away the allegations by saying, "Well, I'm a well-known germaphobe." Okay. And then he said, "You know, I'm a high-profile personality. When I travel, you know, I've told people, be careful what you say in hotel rooms, because they've got these cameras, these tiny cameras, and they put them in the strangest places."
He has a tendency to say things like that, that if you take a step back,
they're admissions.
Yeah,
their
you
admissions.
Can plainly see
how else would
he
know about the cameras in the strangest places? And what, Donnie, are the strangest places for where people have put surveillance cameras that have watched you doing God knows what?
Urethra cam. No, wait a minute.
Potty cam?
Who knows? Who the hell could possibly know at this point? And the journalists, the mainstream journalists, so-called, Les Moonves did a little self-admitting a while back where he said, you know, it's bad for the country, but it's great for business. This is why all these things were kept under wraps for so long. Part of the reason was we've got to string this thing out. We've got to keep the drama going, keep those clicks happening, and keep those eyeballs glued to whatever, you know, stream of so-called information we're sending out there. It's, damn, it's almost time for a frustration freaked out party, because now I'm starting to think about these things and getting freaked out again myself. So maybe I ought to grab up my little bucket.
Well, at least the BBC, and when the guy from the BBC identified himself this morning, Trump said, "Oh yeah, the BBC, another winner." I mean, this guy is a completely out of control mental patient, and he's proof that if you've got enough money, neither law nor medicine applies to you.
I wonder if anyone, remember how they broke into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist office?
Uh-huh.
The plumbers, Nixon's plumbers unit. One wonders, you know, first of all, that doctor that supposedly gave the thumbs up to Trump's health situation.
Yeah, in language that could only be written by Trump.
Yeah. But do you remember the movie and the band played on about the AIDS crisis?
Yep.
There was a scene in there, and I forget the actors, but the researcher, the medical researcher, was trying to track down people who had been with so-called patient zero or trying to track down just the way that AIDS was happening to people, who was maybe sleeping with whom, and what, you know, just to get a picture of the dynamics at play. And they talked, the guy had died, okay, the patient had died. He was a closeted homosexual. And they talked to one of his relatives who swore up and down that he didn't know anything about anything. I think Steve Martin played that actor. And then they look in the guy's phone book, his address book, and there's a cryptic entry that at first glance looks like it's the number for the plumber, okay? But it turns out it's the guy's other doctor, the doctor that nobody knew about, the doctor who was treating him for the problem. One has to wonder, does Trump have one of those doctors squirreled away somewhere?
You got to wonder. Scott, I got to roll because I got other folks jingling in, but it's been a dandy.
Okay,
by the way, just to finish things off, in the BBC interview, the BBC correspondent said, it's very, very difficult, of course, to talk to U.S. intelligence people. They're breaking the law if they talk to you. But I did ask somebody with connections in the CIA to pass a message to them. And I got a message back that there was allegedly more than one tape, not just video, but audio as well, on more than one date, in more than one place, in both Moscow and St. Petersburg.
And in less than 10 days, geez, I don't even want to say it.
Well, you know, here in a couple more days, we'll be able to get that clip from that horrifying movie and just play it in 7 days.
Jeez.
Later, Scott. Tell Punky. All right. Tell Punky he was spot on tonight.
Okay, Bob. We'll give him. I'll give him an extra cracker.
Sounds good. See you later. Bye now. Note coming from Asa. Bob, you're acting like if they release his fucking an underage Ivanka video, it would affect him negatively.
His core supporters will be thrilled to watch it. They'll love him even more. Yeah, it'll be the Paris Hilton sex tape all over again. Or Axl Rose or Hulk Hogan or something like that. Oh, and by the way, suffer the consequences. Remember, one of the advisors to Trump is Peter Thiel. He's the outed gay Silicon Valley billionaire who fronted all the money to destroy, what was the website that published the Hulk Hogan tapes? Yeah. Oh, this is going to be a vicious, vengeful time. And, of course, that's how fascists, you know, roll. Beautiful, ain't it? Remember, there's a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Tracy. She's trying to get a match-a-lanch going so that we can knock down the last $190 of fundraising this evening and crawl out of the hole we're in. Thanks for making that challenge, Tracy, and thanks to everybody who's jumped in to help bring it down considerably this evening. Note coming in from Kitty in Boston. Subject line, Zappa predicted tinkles are, watch out where the hookers go and don't you eat that yellow snow. Kitty says, sorry, had to. Thanks, Kitty. All we can do is sort of keep each other, you know, it's like one of those gymnastic acts where, you know, there's one person who's keeping like 19 people going on their shoulders. That's what we're going for here. Oh my God. In the thawing but still frozen north, it's Ron. Hey, Ron.
Well, hi, Bob. How are you doing today?
You had to ask, didn't you?
Bob?
Yes?
Bob?
Ron?
Well, crap. Okay. Let me try it again.
Okay. And a note coming in from Darlene. Darlene says, Comey, subject line. So presumably Comey knew about the dossier, et cetera, and yet he went after Hillary on the emails that wound up being bogus. Yes, precisely. Comey knew about it all along. And so today he sat in, or yesterday he sat in a hearing, yesterday or today, in D.C. in front of the Intelligence Committee. And they asked him straight up about this bullshit, and he said, oh, I can't comment on an ongoing investigation. You know, except he already did. And yeah, I'm sorry the Sparkle Ponies don't like to be reminded of it, but yes, the Comey bullshit had a significant impact on the election. So, just saying. All right, let's try this again, Ron. Are you there?
Maybe.
That sounds like an answer to the question I asked.
I'm just pretending I'm in Washington.
Oh, you're being spooky.
And a career bureaucrat, yeah.
I was not here. This call did not take place.
So how wide is that ledge you're sitting on tonight, Bob?
It's narrow enough that I'm kind of numb from, like the top third of my thighs down.
Can I give you a glimmer of hope?
I'll take a glimmer of anything. I'll take a glimmer of something about 120 proof if you've got that.
Well, yesterday, Justin Trudeau, the guy with the good hair.
His hair was perfect. Sorry, you mentioned good hair.
I know. I set that one up. I served it up.
You gotta go to Warren Zevon for that.
Yeah, and his hair was perfect. Sorry, I don't do Alex Jones very well. But he appointed a new cabinet, ostensibly geared to deal with a new U.S. administration. And he did a couple of things that I found very interesting. For the head of foreign affairs in Canada, They appointed a lady lawyer by the name of Christina Freeland, I think her name is, who speaks fluent Russian, went directly after them over the Ukraine and Crimea, and has been banned from getting a visa to enter Russia. I found that one interesting. And he's got two or three other people in cabinet who have expertise in international trade, trade agreements like NAFTA, TPP, etc. And so he's sort of serving advance notice that, okay, if you want to bring it, we're ready, but we really, really, really don't want you to do this. Can we talk? So, you got Ontario sitting there going, based on all the rhetoric about where automobile plants are going to be going, and 30 or 40,000 people in Ontario that work for Ford, GM, and Chrysler under NAFTA going, ooh, what's it mean? He wants to have things in the U.S. And, you know, Canadians are sitting there blithely assuming that all this crap he's throwing at Mexico about tariffs don't mean anything. But there's a few people that are going, ooh, ooh, this is, oh, this could have ramifications, as they say here. So we're watching. We're very concerned about Trump. I'd like to say that much of it is ideological, but I might be wrong. I think most of it is economic, because this guy can sneeze and just screw us into depression. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, by us, you mean Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. We are the single biggest trading partner with the U.S., far more than China.
And I'm just asking a question here.
Okay.
We get more oil from Canada than we do from Saudi Arabia by a long shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's say Dipstick wants to put up trade barriers with Canada over, say, automotive plants in Ontario.
Yeah.
What happens if y'all turn the spigot off? I mean, do you think
Canadian, we would give a lot of advance notice, but,
and you'd be very polite about it. I understand.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And we'd send a couple of cold fronts just to reinforce the message.
But you're, there's a long history of Canada not being willing to be fucked with by
yes.
us down here below 4840 or 4640
yes.
or 4420 or whatever that damn slogan
4840
was.
4840 and fight. Yeah, right. Yes, it would be a certainly a strategic option for Canada to do that.
They could Canada could come down here and attack us in February in Bermuda shorts and Aloha shirts.
Yeah, but it oil energy would be a short term strategy. The long term strategy would be water. We got water up here till hell won't have it.
Yeah, y'all haven't managed to poison all of it yet.
No, and there's large portions of the U.S. where the entire economy depends on water. We got it. You want it, or you will. So there are some cards to be played. Some are short-term, some are long-term. But I just wanted to advise...
5440.
5440. Okay.
That according to Stockton Larry.
By the way, I've just had a great time today fighting off the flu and watching all of the puns that are developing and the plays upon words about P-Gate. It's been a hoot.
Yellow journalism.
Yeah. I wasn't the first guy to coin that. I'm certain I wasn't. I didn't see it anywhere, but it just struck me as, oh. So, that being the case, I had to put it out there. But this has been one of those days where you feel like you're looking in through a, like Alice in Wonderland, looking through a window into a parallel world. And this ain't entirely real.
Oh, I know. I've been, believe you me, Agnes and I have been all over this house looking for our ruby fucking slippers.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it'd be okay to just click them and wind up in a black and white world again. Because the color, you know, the color, I've never been crazy about that sort of putrescent burnt orange color anyway.
I call it sort of the dead liver color. You know that color I'm talking about? Just
yeah.
Sort of get
well, he's also the
yellow.
Color of what's the sushi term for?
I digress.
What's the sushi term for sea urchin roe? Uni.
Yep.
He's
I think
about
so.
That color. And uni,
but it's fading. It's fading into bilious, though. I've always liked that term.
Oh
well.
Yes. Oh yes, bilious.
Yeah.
Another great comparison, courtesy of Charlie Pierce earlier today. He's down covering confirmation hearings in Washington, and he said official Washington looks like a bunch of the hands of the Pequod, waiting around for somebody to do something.
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah. Well, I
love a good literary reference. I just can't help it.
Yeah, earlier in the show. I allowed myself to digress, and I got to watch an interchange between on CNN with Kellyanne Conway.
Oh, the Crypt Keeper?
Yeah. Yep. Staunchly defending himself against questions of, we didn't say that. Why are you saying we said that? We did not publish the 35 pages. Yes, but you started it.
I love the ones like, where she says we didn't say that, and then they play grade. The tape of Trump saying it.
And she'll smile and roll her eyes. So it was it's been an interesting day. I'm certainly happy I cannot convey the flu to the members of the Horn family simply through an electronic interchange.
Well, I got to say I am too, but I mean, have you gone out and got your echinacea and your Tamiflu and all that stuff?
Oh, I had the flu shot. I'm taking enough vitamin C that if I look in the mirror, it's either going to be liver failure or I've turned into Trump.
In which case, you're rooting for liver failure, right?
Yeah, they can fix that. So it's I feel like I could. I'm not quite sure whether this is PC or not, but right now I feel like I could have my ass kicked by a 4-year-old little girl, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, and Trump feels that way sometimes, and it makes him really happy.
Not me so much.
Well, you're not weird.
Well, there is. Well.
I said it. You didn't. You just nod your little not weird head, Ron. We'll all see it through the radio.
I have family members that might want to argue with you on that, but I can't get them to call in.
No, we don't know who you could possibly be talking about.
Oh, no, no. Someday, in a perfect world, there will be a mortician from Southern West Virginia give you a call. And I really hope you take it.
Oh, I take everyone that comes in.
He won't be calling for your name and wearing a sigh, but I would suggest you gird your loins because he makes angry look like a pacifist.
Jesus Christ!
And he is incredibly articulate. So,
well, lean harder. I want to have this conversation, but we got to get out of here right now, Ron.
Okay, you all take care.
Go drink your orange juice and bourbon, will you? You'll feel better.
Not just orange juice, but send money, folks.
We're very, very close. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, take care.
Bye now. But we're very close. We're down to $140 to go because Mike and Cascadia just matched Tracy's challenge. So the match-a-lanch is on, and we only need, let's see, how many more? Five and change. And we've got fundraising knocked down if we can just keep Tracy's match-a-lanch going. Thank you very kindly to everybody who, however you participate, and for all your efforts in keeping this little effort on the air, thank you so much. Really. It is amazing the determination of this community to continue the conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve from Georgistan for serving as Prayer Meeting Wednesday moderator. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Get well soon, Gene. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.